Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome. This is Workforce Central, Blog Talk Radio, brought to you by the National Association of Workforce Boards in Washington, D.C. I am your host, Ron Painter, and today we're going to be talking about smart decision-making. I know some of you are thinking, wait a minute, Painter talking about smart decisions, this is a show entirely oxymoronic to him. But I'm going to urge you, relax, hang in there, because I've got a guest today who can really walk us through this subject, and I am delighted to have Scott Johnson, who is the CEO for Social Solutions Incorporated, with me today. Scott, welcome. Thank you for hanging out with me today.
Ron, thank you very much for the welcome. And I thought you were going to be talking about this smart decision-making. Now I'm concerned, but we'll get through it.
We're going to get through it. Let me do a quick bio, because I got to tell you, Scott, your background is fascinating to me, and I just really appreciate what I know is an enormous amount of work that you do in your home community. Scott Johnson joined Social Solutions in 2011, bringing with him over 20 years of experience in the software industry. He is currently the CEO, which means he provides the strategic leadership to the company's growth efforts in new and existing markets. Social Solutions, for those of you who aren't necessarily familiar, is mission is to empower nonprofits and government entities to use the company's ETO software, and I'm going to ask you to, in a minute, Scott, to tell me about ETO, to match the efforts to desired outcomes more effectively. For those of you who are trying to figure it out, yes, Scott is a fellow Pennsylvanian. He has a marketing degree from Lehigh University. He now lives in Bordertown with his wife and six kids. And Scott, there are a ton of local and charitable organizations that you have started, work with, all of which are around your passion for helping at-risk youth. So I want to say thank you for that. And again, I want to say welcome, and I appreciate you joining me.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
ETO, real quick. ETO stands for?
Sure. It stands for efforts to outcomes. But Ron, I want to just sort of turn the clock back a little bit and say how Social Solutions got its start, and then talk about the mission of our company and why I'm over here right now. So Social Solutions has been around for 15 years. We actually celebrate our 15-year anniversary this summer, which is very exciting. And we've been doing the same thing for 15 years. We've been doing, as you just asked, efforts to outcome software, which is actually managing a caseworker's efforts into desired outcomes. And we do it across the entire social services realm. So when we talk about social services, we talk about more than the human services program. In our eyes, there's actually 315 federal programs which encompass all of social services. And we look at it from a holistic perspective in that today we're talking about the labor and workforce vertical within Social Solutions. But Social Solutions, we got our start 15 years ago working with multi-service nonprofits who do an array of programs across all the verticals. So when we talk about social services, we're looking at the labor and workforce, which we're talking about today, but we're also looking at the human services and social services program, the education-based program, the housing-based programs, and more importantly, the justice and corrections-based programs. And I say more importantly because that's sort of where my passion lies. So when I decided to join Social Solutions 4 years ago, the idea was to take this company that's doing fantastic work in Baltimore with these nonprofits who are the highest performing nonprofits in the world and try to take the best practices and lessons learned and the ETO implementations and move that up to the city, the county, the state, and eventually the federal government. So that's kind of where I came when I started looking at Social Solutions. And I said, wouldn't it be great if we could have this one nonprofit over here that's doing fantastic outcomes in placing veterans in jobs, taking how they do it, and then reporting that up to the city, the county, and the state, and then to other localities and nonprofits, and sharing the lessons learned. And that was sort of the genesis of the Efforts to Outcomes software. And then over the past 4 years, we really track, you know, how the federal government is funding these types of programs. So we'd love to see WIOA that's actually going to do some job training and looking at evidence-based programs. That is in the sweet spot for my company and in the sweet spot for our customers. And then at the end of the day, you know, we have a really strong cultural focus, which we've had now for 15 years, which is we are trying to equip the caseworkers, the job developers, the counselors to transform lives of those that walk through their door. And that's kind of where we are right now, and they use our software, Efforts to Outcomes, to actually do that.
That's pretty cool. I'm going to remind, if you're listening live and you have a question, Donna Riles, as always, is at the controls, and you can reach her at 773-897-6309. You can reach Donna, and she can get a question to myself and my guest, Scott Johnson. Scott, that's pretty cool. 15 years, I guess that's how long I've been hanging out with Bojan, and you all have been hanging out with us at the forum. You're going to be joining us as a gold sponsor, which I appreciated, at NAWB's 35th annual forum we've been getting together. Scott, you mentioned the INO, the Innovation and Opportunity Act, the INO. How are you guys looking at the legislation? What do you see there?
Yeah, so when we serve the nonprofit community and the public sector community, we really sit in a unique spot. And when what the nonprofits and the public sector community have in common is that there's funding that funds the nonprofits as well as our government, and there's a level of accountability and reporting that needs to justify the funding. So there's lots of funding streams out there and block grants that are based on outputs. In other words, you know, you're serving a homeless population, the HUD funding stream will give you a certain amount of money depending on how many people that are homeless. And we, you know, a lot of our nonprofits have been using the WIA funding, you know, that's been around since 1998, right, to actually go through and fund the nonprofits as well as the Workforce Innovation Board's funding them as well. So that funding is always a very important aspect to what we do at Social Solutions, because if we're going to build a solution and nobody has revenue or a desire to actually use the solution, it doesn't do us any good. It's one of the things I learned early in my career, right? If you're going to build the mousetrap, make sure there's some mice around. So we are always looking at legislation, and I wish as a we're a 200 person company now. We grow 40% year over year the past 4 years, so we're growing, right? We're always carrying the performance management and the managing to outcomes flag. We carried it at the nonprofit level as well as the state and local government level. We're starting to carry it at the federal level. So as we try to do that, we have our eye on every type of funding that's coming down from the president and from the department. So when we see funding like the WIOA Act, we love it because it's right in our sweet spot. We're going to start moving towards outcomes, right? We're going to start measuring performance. We're going to start measuring our data and then try to bring in this smart decision making, which says, hey, I have data for 10 years on this target population who I'm trying to get jobs for. I should go through and actually change how I deliver services based on the data I have and based on the successes I had. So when we see an act like this coming out, we get very excited as a company because it provides funding for the nonprofits and the public sector, which is great. And it's funding where it says, hey, guess what? You need to create some individualized plans. You need to go through and work with the employers on how you're helping people. So funding like this is great for us. We track, you know, all funding streams. I think we track about 320 funding streams across the 315 programs that we do. And it's very exciting to us to see legislative change coming down in the way of dollars. And I'll give you a quick example of a funding stream that we started tracking. It was probably 6 years ago. So when Obama came in, you know, Obama has a passion for helping communities, right? And we all know that in some communities around the United States, the job outlook and the career outlook is bleak. It just is. My home community in Pottstown, Pennsylvania, the job outlook is bleak. So Obama put some funding. Now it's under education, which is fine because the education funding is going to integrate with this labor funding, and we're going to start working together, you know, in a more coordinated fashion. But he put together some funding called the Promised Neighborhoods. And what the Promised yeah. Neighborhoods desire was, it was called Cradle to Career. So the desire is, I'm going to work with all the target participants from the time they're born to the time they're 18 or the time they're in the career. And it was very specific in the wording. It didn't say cradle to college. It didn't say cradle to job, right? It was cradle to career. And in doing that, you know, we put together some performance metrics and some key performance indicators along the lifetime of the child. So in other words, you know, we want to see you born at a healthy birth weight. If you're born at a healthy birth rate, the goals and where you're going to end up in society is better than if you're not. It's just a real high level. And at third grade, you have to be able to read and you have to be able to write.
Yeah.
So basic metrics like this, we started tracking in these communities, and we started doing it in Harlem, which is one of the tougher communities in the United States for the welfare population, and it has a ton of funding going to it. So we got in front of this initiative. We configured our software, right? Because at the end of the day, Ron, we're software, right? We help people transform lives. We don't transform lives, right? We are the tools and the services and the solutions that the caseworkers work with. We are not the caseworkers. So it's our job to help drive them towards outcomes and drive results. And
right. And I want to come back to that distinction that you make, Scott, because we've talked about this before. You all make the distinction between output and outcome. How do
Correct.
You differentiate in your mind when you're, I mean, I know that that's very distinct from our conversation, very distinct in your mind. For the listeners, how do you describe output versus outcome? Because I think it's really, when we talk more about how data is used, I think this is so fascinating, the differentiation you make.
Yeah, and it's one that we're always looking for, right? So when we're talking with WIBS and other workforce agencies and state departments of labor, we're listening for the term outcome, right? We're actively listening for that, and we're listening for the term performance management, right? When we hear the term output, it's basically, in our minds, it's a number that they're kicking. So in other words, if a WIBS job is to find 1,000 jobs for 1,000 people, that's an output, right? So 5,000 people walk through the door, their job is to find 20% of them jobs and kick out an output of 1,000 people that have jobs. We love that work, right? It's great, the work that the WIBS do and all these nonprofits and these government agencies, they're doing finding jobs. It's really hard to find a job nowadays. But we look at outcomes as steps along the way to actually finding a job. So in other words, in my home community, I have my own nonprofit called Jehovah Jireh, where one of the things that we try to do through a mentoring relationship is try to get people ready for work. In other words, when somebody says to me, hey, I need a job, I always say to them, you need a career. You need a career, and the job is your step to get to your career. But when you're dealing with a population that has certain challenges, you know, it's not as simple as, Ron, you and I going through on LinkedIn, finding an open job and applying, right? This is a population that maybe has a felony, maybe is a veteran, maybe has substance abuse, maybe just doesn't know how to work, right? So there's different outcomes along the way that the job developers and the caseworkers are moving towards getting somebody a job. Right, because
it's one of the exciting things in I&O. I think it's pretty smart on the part of the folks who wrote the bill to recognize that workforce is a system inside systems in communities. I mean, you can't do what you need to do and not be cognizant, not be engaged with these other systems as you're talking about, whether that's health, the health of the community, education, those factors.
Yeah, you are spot on. And when I take a look at, you know, that what works in job training, a synthesis of evidence, that document, and again, my passion is working with the youth, right? For the most part, 16
yes.
to 24 year olds who are now in gangs or are now kicked out of school or just struggling, and I look at what they're looking to do with youth, right? And I just want to read this to you just because I think it's written really well. It says, youth disconnected from work in school, including those who have serious disadvantages such as early childbearing, homelessness, or involvement with the criminal justice system, have the most difficult challenges succeeding in adulthood. But there is some evidence that can be benefited from comprehensive and integrated models that combine education, occupational skills, and support services. That is the sweet spot for me personally, but also for social solutions, because it's bringing in the efforts of education, of workforce development, and other support services like one you mentioned was health. And that's where our software will work to bring about outcomes. So in other words, I'll give you a couple of real-life examples. If somebody walks in a WIB and they need to get a job, they just walk in there, I need to get a job, and my skill set is I'm really strong. And Ron, you know, I am really strong. I lift weights all the time, but that's for another day, right? So they walk in there. They're 6'5", 250 pounds. They just walked off the college football field, and they want to get a job, right? It may be easy to say, guess what? Hey, we should go send him over to Home Depot, right? And I'm trying not to be
yeah.
stereotypical, but this is how it works. We should send him over to Home Depot. They go over to Home Depot, and guess what? They have no idea what it means to show up on time. Hey, you should be here at 10 o'clock. Well, what do you mean? Well, 10 o'clock is when you start, right? So therefore, there needs to be some structure in actually getting that person ready to work. And then there may be some underlying challenges where that person gets a job, and a month later, they start missing work because of something else going on. Maybe there's a child at home, and they don't have child care. Maybe there's a substance abuse issue. Maybe it's just a training and resources issue. So the more that we can actually work with the employers on employer engagement, which is what are the skill sets you're looking for, where do you want those people, then I can start working with this target population to meet that need is a perfect fit for us, and also is what is really comes out in the WIOA legislation.
And Scott, that's sort of like if you coming back to as you're talking about these various systems, let me stop myself for half a second, remind people you are listening to Workforce Central Blog Talk Radio, brought to you by the National Association of Workforce Boards. I'm Ron Painter. Scott Johnson, CEO for Social Solutions, is joining me this afternoon. We're talking about performance management and smart decision making. Scott, when you were talking about these other systems, and we were looking at you were reading the article about dropouts, and part of that's dependent on their health and early childhood, each of those would have had some output, right? Education would have said if somebody completes, how many of them finish. That's an output. It's not an outcome, right? It's just the every one of those systems has outputs. This whole notion of how do you combine that? How do you, how do you get to the point where you're making these? What are, smart decisions? How do you look at performance? I guess performance management is what we're talking about. Performance out of the system. How do you guys see that?
Yeah, that's a great question, because, you know, in the past we always talked about performance management. Right, we always talk about helping WIBs and helping states and helping nonprofits be high performing, right? And it was great, right? It was a really strong thought leadership position that we took. The Office of Management and Budget loved it, right? The U.S. Department of Labor loved it. But what we found out is when we take that story to the WIBs and we take that story to the nonprofits, it's almost insulting. In other words, I'm coming there saying, and look, once again, I'm only the software. right? We're the software people. We have the solutions, right? We're trying to get stuff out of people's heads, off people's tablets, out of Excel, into a tool where they can start measuring change over time. So that's all we are. We're the software. And when I come and I start saying, you guys need to perform better, your caseworkers need to do this, your job developers need to be more efficient, that is an extremely tough conversation, because the nature of those in those jobs is they are doing fantastic work. Their caseloads are too high. There's too many people unemployed that are walking through their door that need help. So when we talk about performance management, we talk about performance management as the accountability, the data flows back up on what you're doing. But when we're dealing with those on the ground, we talk about managing to outcomes, which is, guess what? I understand your job is really hard. You deal with 12 people every day, and you try to get them jobs, and through the course of a week, you're dealing with 60 people, and you get one person a job. From a personal satisfaction perspective, that's really hard, and maybe it's 20 people, maybe it's 30 people, but the people that are doing the work there want to get everybody a job, right? So therefore, we try to bring them tools that help them focus on the proper steps and the proper outcomes to actually getting a job. Right. So in other words, if I were to say to a job developer, how many people did you work with last year? I worked with 100 people. How many jobs did you provide? I provided 23 jobs. Right. On one hand, that may be great. He may be the top person or she may be the top person in their WIB. On the other hand, there's a bunch of people, 77 in this example, that haven't gotten jobs. So it's really cool to go through and say, guess what? I got 23 people jobs. Out of my other 77, 24, I'm working on engagement. I'm working on just employer engagement and different ways for them to communicate. Another 12, I'm working on time management. Another 10, I'm helping with my partner agency over here on substance abuse. And guess what? This other 10 or so over here, they're veterans, and we are overcoming PTSD and other challenges on getting back to the workforce. So we really, when we're talking to the agencies, we really try to narrow down on it's managing to outcomes, because when you set an outcome different than an output, and Ron, I think I'm finally answering your question here from 7 minutes ago. when we set that, an output is open and close. A case is open and close. You came in, you won the job, I got your job, there's your output, one person got a job. An outcome is, oh my goodness, it's going to take a significant amount of time. It's not that easy, and therefore I want to be able to show change in time. In other words, I'm working with this person on their skills, right? It's a certification. It's a test. It's whatever the desired skills are, so I can match those skills up to what the employer is looking for, and that may take 6 months. So rather than saying, hey, guess what? I haven't gotten this person a job for 6 months. Look at how I moved the needle on these four other factors that help and getting the job. So 6 months from now, when that job becomes available, they're ready to go. And guess what? They're going to stay in that job. Because the other thing that's really hard for us is a society, and I started this conversation by talking about getting a job or getting a career. People will get a job for 2 months, it doesn't work out, and then they're back in the system. Whereas if we get a job that can evolve into a career and they want to have that job and they're qualified for that job, and we measure how long they stay at that job, it's an entirely different scenario. There's a different metric there, and that's where the outcomes come into play.
There are two things that struck me, Scott. One is certainly, I as a policy sort of always wanted to say, and you sort of opened the door, I've always wanted to say to the data people, hey, I'm not here because you are. You're here because I am. So when you opened by saying, I'm just the software guy, I sort of had to, I've been meaning to say that. I've wanted to say that to data people. So I apologize that I put it on you. But there are two things about
Ron, that's actually a really good point. So I won't name any states or nonprofits, but we have a nonprofit who is killing it, right? In one of an East Coast city, a very big East Coast city, they are doing a phenomenal job. And they're doing such a good job that they've made it all the way up to the state, and the state says, oh my goodness, what is that nonprofit doing? How come they're placing all these jobs? How are they doing this? And they provided an impact report, right, which is an efforts to outcomes report that shows you the outcomes along the way up to the state. And then I got called into the state. I went with the state, and the data people said, hey, we need that data. How did you get that report? can we get the how you built that report? I said, well, It's more than just a report, right? The report is the output. The outcomes are the software behind that are driving the actions of the job developers to help somebody find that job. And that is my impact report. And I said, you can have the report, but guess what? You need to put our software in, and you actually need to transform how you're delivering the services.
Yeah, and that's a question I was I'm not sure how to ask the question, Scott, but I mean, part of what it seemed to me that the ETO software does is a way for our industry to get into mass customization. And you mentioned part of that when you were saying you have the case manager or the person at the one stop who's able to explain, I've got 100 clients and here's where they are, here's the various activity. But, I mean, is that part of the outcome? But before I ask that, I wanted to ask you, so typically when you go in to start working with an organization, what's the amount, do you guys have a rule of thumb that you figure if they're spending X percent of their time filling out reports versus providing real services, I mean, what do you typically see? What kind of efficiencies could you extract out of that in better software?
Yeah, that's great, and we get that question across all our verticals. You know, what is the ROI? What is the social return on our investment? What is our impact? And one thing that we see across the WIBs and the one-stops is we see a reduction of 40% in staff time where they do reporting input compliance activities. And the desire is to take that, because it's done through the software, right? The desire is to take that 40% and actually allow them to spend more time with the participants, more time working with them rather than justifying work. So that's a statistic that we see across many of our WIBs. We also see the whole integration over to the UI system, right? Taking the UI benefits payments down from 15 weeks to 9 weeks is another huge savings that we see.
That is wild. 40%
is
40%. Spent on the reporting and compliance.
Correct.
Wow. I get excited when I hang out with you guys and talk with you guys, because I really feel like part of the mental processes that have kept us as workforce development folks in a box is we sort of look at the world that way, reporting and compliance. And we fail, I think, to recognize there are other industries that are fairly regulated, that are strongly regulated. They still manage to do innovation. So I like the idea of focusing on, can we get the mechanics, this reporting stuff, can we get that contained? Because the real innovation does come, right, with this notion of outcome. How are we really helping our communities advance? How are we really helping the people we're working with?
Yeah, that's entirely correct, Ron. And then the other thing is what you get is, you know, the more information you get and the better you get to know your participants, the more likely you are to actually go after and receive different types of funding. So we have a fantastic agency down in Baltimore, where we're based in Baltimore, that uses our software, that does phenomenal work on job placement, right? And they have a pay-per-performance type of model, where they will get a certain amount of money if the person stays there 3 months after, some more funding if they get 6 months after, and then more if it's a year. So therefore, there's a tighter relationship, or we call it the level of engagement, between the job developer and the participant, which is naturally built into how they receive their funding. But the other thing that this agency was able to do, they said, oh my goodness, in the past, you know, our population has changed. You know, we're going to keep our door open for whoever walks through it, because that's what a lot of nonprofits do, which is fantastic. And guess what? We noticed that a lot of veterans are walking through our door. And the same employers that I worked with in the past and the same, you know, individualized IEPs I put together for my past participants is different. So they said, we're not going to change. When a veteran walks through our door, we're going to change how we do it. Rather than saying, what are they eligible for, you know, what types of services can we do in particular for that individual? And then once they started doing that, they went and got additional funding because they are now providing services to veterans. So there's a
whole... And that's part of what you guys are seeing, Scott, is this ability to really you know, we make a lot of fun of the fact that WIA was universal service, and people say, you know, universal service means no one gets served particularly well. But what you're talking about is the ability to differentiate. I know that's sort of
Ron. That's not even.
I won't. I won't. I won't credit that to Paul Harrington. But I. Yeah, I will. But I mean, but what you're saying is this also provides you, when you really start focusing on outcomes and metrics, it really does allow you to back up and say, what is it we really do well? Which I, right? I mean, that's part of what you're seeing.
That's entirely correct. And we're starting to see, which we also see in the WIA grant, is the ability of different types of agencies to work together. Right. In other words, Ron, if your job is to provide, you know, your main job is provide jobs, right? And my job is to provide some sort of health support services, and we're both on the same block, right, in downtown Boston, we should work together, right? In other words, if somebody walks to the door for you and you say, oh my goodness, they could actually use the health services that Scott's One Stop or Scott's nonprofit provides over here, I should refer them over here, and we should put together a consolidated plan to help that person, because it shouldn't matter what door they walk through first. If they walk through, and I'll be real generic here, an education-based door via community college or a hospital, right, or a one-stop, it shouldn't matter, because, you know, at the end of the day, the desire is to get that person a job and to get them back into a successful, functioning member of that society.
And I'll put you on the spot, Scott. You coming out of the, well, I mean, you're still in the private sector, but focused on the nonprofit. But coming out of the private sector, is that sense of co-opetition, that sense of there are things as a company I do well, but there are gnarly problems in my industry, and oh, if we sit at the table together, even though we compete, we might be able to solve some of these gnarly core problems in our industry. Is that a lesson that you think we could stand to learn better in the nonprofit and in our side of the ledger?
Yeah, I think that at the end of the day, society believes that the quick fix for any number of conditions or any other demographics that walk through a door of a WIB is to get a job. Just get it. Just go. Quick job, right? And I think as a society, and this is kind of what they're doing in those promised neighborhoods I talked about earlier, right? Bringing back all the different types of supports and services to help that person to get a job, keep a job, move into a career is one of the things where outcomes and my software could sit over top of everything, right? In other words, I can actually create an IEP, an individual plan, that sits across five different types of agencies, right? And we see it really prevalent, Ron, over in the public sector, in that, okay, you're this age, you go to this agency, here's the type of services you get. Oh my goodness, you just turned 5 years old. Now you need to walk across the street and receive these type of services, you know? And then if as a society, if we don't figure out a way to remove somebody or give them a ladder out of that current condition, it goes on and on. Now you're 12. Now you're in middle school. Now you have these challenges. Now you're 16. Now you're in high school. And you still may have the same core challenge. And then now you're in the workforce trying to get a job where nobody actually helped you with the core challenge that's gone up there. And that's where the whole coordination is. And then, Ron, that's very difficult, right? I'm not saying Social Solutions has it figured out, because there's so many different caseworkers and public sector agencies and nonprofits that are working to try to help that individual, and there's not a real shared services around there. So what we try to do is try to equip the caseworker, wherever that person walks in, whatever door they walk through, it's our desire that they have ETO software, and they are trying to bring about outcomes for that individual. And the door that we are talking about today is the workforce door. So therefore, we want to make sure that they have all the tools in front of them to help that person get a job, get a career, and move forward in society.
Yeah, and what we see here at NAWB, Scott, is that we think in the INO, boards are not only positioned well to look at cross-community systems and issues and some of these really gnarly problems in communities, but we see the Act saying, you know, guess what, guys? You are responsible to come up with how is this workforce development system going to work for you locally? Scott, we have a couple minutes. I want to extract a promise from you. I know that you guys are very involved in a project called the Leap of Reason and the Performance Imperative. I'm going to ask you to come back and join me to talk about those initiatives and really talk about the focus on metrics. Again, I know that you guys are a very core part of all of that work. But I want to ask you, so as you look at what you guys are doing, so what's next? What's the next kind of enhancement, if you're allowed to tell me, that you guys are working on?
Yeah, we are it's not really an enhancement. We put together a strategy a few years ago where wherever somebody comes through a door, an assistance door, let's just call it that, we want to be able to provide the software to help them. So as we look across, you know, what's great about the WIBS is they're focused on the community, right? So if we look across any types of community initiatives, hey, we're going to help this community, we're going to help this neighborhood, that's a perfect fit for us because it brings about a level of coordination, which is great, you know, because our software is used by a lot of agencies to work together to help an individual. So we're going to continue going down that route. And then the other sort of big thing which we have our eyes on is the whole pay for performance initiative, right? So yeah. We're always looking at innovation funds and those types of grants and awards, and they're you know, a lot of our customers receive them. But as we move to, you know, hey, guess what? You not only need to provide outcomes and outputs, but let's justify, you know, what type of work you're doing. And then ideally, the federal government that gives out the funding, and, you know, around in the nonprofit community, there's some foundations that give that. We want them placing the bets on those that are producing the best outputs and the best outcomes, right? That's where the bet should be placed. So the more that we can inform them and move to this pay for performance is a great fit for us. So that's a big focus for us as a company. It's an international focus as well as a local focus, and it goes across, you know, not only workforce, you know, in other words, we're going to pay you X number of dollars for somebody who you get a job for and an X number of dollars for somebody who keeps that job, and there's different metrics associated with there. You know, that's a big push for us as a company.
Awesome. May I invite myself somewhat, I guess, north to Baltimore to come and hang out with you guys and learn more?
That would be great. You're always welcome. We'll give you a crab cake. You'll love it.
All right, I will. Scott, you guys are also joining us at the forum.
Ron, I did want to mention one more thing. You know, so we spent a lot of time focusing on helping those that walk through the door that need jobs. The other part that is equally important is we want to train and bring in skills that are the skills that are being hired for, right? So in other words, if it turns out in downtown Baltimore that there's 1,000 jobs for people that have this type of skill set, we want to be able to work with the population looking for jobs to get them ready to fill that school set, you know, that skill set. And one of the things that we're doing, and this may be going off a little bit off topic, but I think it's so cool, we're working with the state of California Department of Corrections for those that are walking out of prison into transitional housing and trying to help them build their resumes and build their skills to meet the needs of the workforce. And we see that as a big push, not only to bring them back in society and other sort of soft, tangible benefits, but the return that somebody who walks out of prison does not do a circle and come right back in, they call it the recidivism rate, is phenomenal for us. So, you know, working with the employers and the employer engagement to help some of those that are toughest to place, right? Those with a felony. I talked about the veterans, those who are going through vocational rehab and other types of challenges is a really strong push for us in the future, along with the pay for performance.
Good stuff, and pretty consistent with, you know, I think with the culture of Social Solutions. Scott Johnson, CEO of Social Solutions. Thank you from me and on behalf of the listeners for joining me today. I know you're going to be joining us at the forum. You're going to be a panelist for us on Monday at the issue session, determining a strategic purpose, so people can catch you at the forum. If not, they can go out to the Social Solutions website and catch more. Scott, thanks. I really am looking forward to you joining us again.
Thank you very much, and thank you very much for the insightful questions. I would love to talk to people, you know, at the forum. That'd be great.
Awesome. You've been listening to Workforce Central Blog Talk Radio, brought to you by the National Association of Workforce Boards. I'm Ron Painter, and I look forward to you joining me in the future. Thank you.
Thank you.